This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the University of New Mexico could be facing criminal charges for their connection with the probe into Planned Parenthood's sale of aborted baby body parts. Chairman of the House Select Committee on Infant Lives, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, is here in just a moment with the details. Also, prayer is apparently off limits on Clemson University campus. Emily Yashinsky with the Young Americas Foundation joins me with this disturbing story. And an update from our partners at Samaritan's Purse, who are coordinating the activities of hundreds of volunteers in the cleanup effort here in Louisiana. Todd Taylor, Assistant Manager of U.S. Disaster Relief, joins me a little bit later here on Washington Watch with the latest. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's program, our guest. You can also find out more about the Values Voter Summit, which is just around the corner. It's coming up September the 9th, 10th, and 11th in Washington, D.C. You can be a part of it. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over and see the exciting lineup of speakers that will be there. The only thing missing right now is you. So go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. That's at T. Perkins. And a little bit later, we're going to go to the phone lines so we can hear from you on this Monday afternoon. Speaking of Values Voter Summit, our first guest is going to be there as well. Now, you may remember the accusations that we covered recently surrounding the University of New Mexico Medical School and their dissecting of aborted baby brains during a summer camp. Now, in a videotaped interview, Paul Roth, dean of the School of Medicine, confirmed the dissections were indeed conducted, stating, quote, "We had a faculty member who in fact obtained some tissue and during one of these summer workshops dissected, I think, one or two fetal brains." Well, now the House Select Panel on Infant Lives is taking action. In a letter to the Attorney General of New Mexico, panel chair person Marsha Blackburn is charging the university, is saying that they could be facing a criminal probe for their transfer of aborted baby body parts from the abortion clinic, the Southwestern Women's Options, to the university. Now, this is pretty serious. Joining me now with the latest on this is, as I mentioned, the chairperson of the House Select Committee on Infant Lives. She represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn. Marsha, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It is good to be with you, and thank you for your attention to this issue.
Well, tell our listeners the latest on this, that you have sent a letter to the Attorney General there in New Mexico warning that a criminal investigation could begin.
We did. The AG in New Mexico is Hector Balderas, and June 23rd, we sent a letter to him detailing evidence that we have received that University of New Mexico and Southwest Women's Options could have violated New Mexico's Jonathan Spradling Anatomical Gift Act. It's called the Spradling Act, that they're in New Mexico. And so the letter also noted that we felt that further investigation was needed into whether or not UNM and the Women's Options Clinic had violated 42 U.S.C. 289G2, and that is the federal statute that we've talked about from the beginning of our investigation into the selling. It's the statute that makes the selling or the exchange of body parts for valuable consideration a 10-year felony offense. And so we noted this. We sent all of the evidence that was done June 23rd. And, Tony, we are yet to hear anything from the Attorney General.
So what does that suggest, Marsha, with the Attorney General being silent? Is he just not interested in it? Is he covering for them? What do you think?
I think probably he's trying to figure out how they could have had something on the books that would have, first of all, violated the Spradling Act. secondly, how they could have ended up using the dissected parts for a camp. We have that information. And third, how they could have committed this offense, because all of these fetal body parts that are coming from Southwestern Women's Options are going to UNM. Now, the Southwestern Women's Options provides abortions through all three trimesters of pregnancy. And they are the sole provider of tissue to UNM. And we have discovered that the personnel within UNM's hospital and medical school have aggressively engaged in expanding abortion in New Mexico through their offices, their personnel, and the resources of the university. And we have detailed this in the letter to the Attorney General.
So what then, other than obviously providing the tissue, what is the, is there a deeper relationship here between the university and Planned Parenthood? What is there a connection there that's deeper than what we see on the surface?
Well, Southwest Women's Options is not a Planned Parenthood clinic. But what we need the Attorney General to do is to get to the bottom of what is going on and what is going to, what is transpiring at the University of New Mexico in participation with this abortion clinic, the Southwest Women's Option. Because what we have found is that you've got leadership personnel at UNM that have expanded the university's role in training new abortion doctors, and they have expanded the university's referral for abortion services to outside clinics, including the clinic, the Southwest Women's Options, where they obtained their tissue. And they have initiated the practice of sending UNM faculty and residents to an abortion clinic during its transition from one owner to another. They have expanded the faculty of UNM by providing volunteer faculty status to some local abortionists, and they've provided residents and fellows to perform the abortions at this clinic. So, you know, all of these are things that we feel deserve further attention. And the Spradling Act that I've mentioned prohibits making anatomical gifts of the remains of any fetus that is the product of an induced abortion. So we know that under the Spradling Act that the bodies or the parts of aborted fetuses may not be anatomical gifts. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to go back in. We think the Attorney General needs to look at this and look at if it is, look at the documentation that we've provided and see if indeed you have a violation here. And we think that the evidence that we have shown where the UNM department head did have those high school students dissecting the aborted baby brains is something that deserves really a second, a closer look, and they need to move forward with what the violation may possibly be under the law.
Mm-hmm. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, the purpose for that law, as you have defined it, is simply to take away the incentive for people to encourage abortion so that they could use those baby body parts, for one. And if the law has been violated, then it needs to be enforced. You're calling upon the Attorney General then to investigate and enforce the law. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
So folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, my guest. She chairs the House Select Committee on Infant Lives, talking about this investigation, this probe into the sale of baby body parts, which now has a connection to the University of New Mexico. Now, let me ask you this. Has there been any communication with the officials at the University of New Mexico? Have they given any explanation about the use of these body parts of babies?
We do not have official communication from them, but of course we are continuing to work through this process.
What do you think will be the outcome here if the Attorney General there remains silent, does not take action? Is there anything else that can be done to enforce the law?
Well, I think that you've got the possibility of the federal offense under 42 U.S.C. 289G2, which we have referenced. And yes, there are other things that can be done. We just know that state law, the Spreadling Act, exists. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we felt that the AG in New Mexico should be the one to move forward with this. You know, Tony, as we uncover wrongdoing or what gives the perception or shows a trend of wrongdoing, then it behooves us, as our select panel who is doing this investigation, to forward that to the appropriate individuals and be ready to move forward.
Certainly. Certainly. I mean, that's what I think the American people would expect you
that's
to do
right.
if you find information.
They do expect that. And bear in mind, all of this is being done with taxpayer funds. And so that causes a tremendous amount of concern from individuals. It has long been a bipartisan agreement that federal funds should not be used for abortion services or to incent abortion services. There has also been, as we passed the law, that made it illegal to sell baby body parts or to sell body parts in the country. It was made explicit within the law by Democrat amendment, that you could not make a profit from the sale of body parts. And I have heard from so many people who are involved in organ donor programs, and Tony, they say for the integrity of that program, we need to get in behind this and get this figured out.
Absolutely.
Because our transplant programs, the organ donor programs, depend on there not being a for-profit market in the sale of body parts.
Yes, this could have far-reaching unintended consequences that could affect a lot of people. So it's important that the law be enforced as you do this investigation. So, Marsha Blackburn, once again, commend you for your leadership on this and the role that you're taking in exposing what is not only illegal, but in my view, also immoral.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you again for your time. And Tony, I will tell you, we appreciate everyone who has supported us in these endeavors. And one thing I want to add, not to do with the select panel, but just to you, we have prayed for you and your neighbors in Louisiana. We know you've had a tough go of it the last few weeks. And
we know
that you all are recovering well.
We appreciate that. Thanks so much, Marsha. Look forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit coming up next
week. Absolutely. See you then. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Clemson University, where prayer is apparently not welcomed on campus. We're going to be discussing that issue and still more to come, give you an update on what's happening here in Louisiana as it pertains to the relief efforts in helping folks put their lives back together after this historic flood. Don't go away. We're coming back with a lot more Washington Watch right after this.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Freedom is an amazing gift from God, and He's given us an incredible number of heroes charged with the job of protecting it. I'm Eric Horner, and I'd like to invite you to be a part of doing something really special for those who've answered freedom's call. On Saturday, September 17th, Operation Tankful of Love, in partnership with American Family Radio, will again be working to bless the men and women serving at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, with a gift of some free gas. It's a great way to say thank you to our soldiers for all they do. We'll be serving around 1,800 soldiers that day, and we need your help to make it happen. If you'd like to be a part of Operation Tankful of Love 2016, you can give us a call at 877-968-3742 to make your tax-deductible donation. That number again is 877-968-3742. You can also donate online by going to www.tankfulofloveoutreach.com. Won't you join us in being the hands and feet of Jesus to those who serve?
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us, "The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever." In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit." Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345, and our website is afafoundation.net.
Listening to Washington Watch, I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you once again, because it's just around the corner, September 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, right? Values Voter Summit. To find out more details about who all will be there, including the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, he'll be there. And many, many others. Bill Bennett is going to be our honoree on the Saturday night at the gala for the FRC Leadership Award. You can find out all the details and find out how you can be a part of it, which I would strongly encourage you to be. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Okay, university campuses. If you have not been on a university campus in recent years, it's pretty hostile, you know, to the things we believe in, to conservatism, faith, family freedom. You know, they used to be a safe place for the arguing of differing ideas in the educational atmosphere. I mean, I can remember even when I was there that, you know, debate was encouraged. Well, not so much so anymore. They've become a place where Christians and conservatives are bullied in order that this progressive agenda be pushed. There's tolerance, but only one way. Now, last week on the campus of Clemson University, an administrator asked a man who was praying on the campus to leave because he was not standing in what is called a designated free speech area. Now, call me ignorant, but I thought that all of the United States was a free speech area. Don't we have the freedom of speech? So now we have the freedom, but it has to be within this cordoned off area that bureaucrats grant us. Well, someone who helped break this story, it was caught on video by a Clemson student who is a member of the Young Americas Foundation. And joining me now with the latest on this is Young America Foundation spokesman Emily Yashinsky. Emily, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for bringing attention to this story, Emily. Tell our listeners what happened there on the campus of Clemson University.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a pretty strong Young Americans for Freedom chapter at Clemson. We stay in pretty close contact with those students down there. They're great patriots. They're fighting for their freedoms. And last Friday, they sent us this video of something that had happened to them. On Thursday afternoon, one of their students was passing through, a public space on campus, and a man who had been there for a while, he'd been there for a few days. This is something that he does. He silently had a couple chairs set up. One had a sign on it that read prayer. And he was just silently offering students who were passing through the area the opportunity to sit down and pray with him. And that seemed to be a popular offer throughout the course of the week. And she noticed a university bureaucrat essentially coming up to him and saying that he was violating the university's policy about solicitation. So his offer to silently pray with students constituted solicitation. Clemson is a public campus, so this was public space. And if he wanted to do it, he would have to solicit his prayers in a designated free speech area. Again, a public campus, so the student took out her phone, interrogated the university bureaucrat on camera, got him to admit to exactly what he was doing and saying this needs to happen in a designated free speech area. And we did our best to help them expose this ridiculous policy and hopefully bring some change to their school. It's really sad to see what happened there, but we're proud of them for standing up.
Well, Emily, a couple of questions for you. First, was this man who was offering to pray, was he harassing students in any way, or was he just sitting there allowing students to approach him, and then he made the offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So he was being silent. You know, he was letting his sign, the sign actually simply just read prayer in all caps. He was letting his sign do the talking for him, and if the student wanted to join him in his offer to pray, he would do so with them. But no, he wasn't harassing anybody at all.
Were there any reports that you're aware of that complaints were filed because this man was bothering people, or was it just his administrator that approached him?
Yeah, so the students seem to think it was sort of one disgruntled student that probably went and complained about it, and that's what prompted the university bureaucrat to go up. The man himself who was doing the praying says that he had, and this is, to me is really kind of moving, had a very powerful reaction to his offer throughout the course of the days that he was there on campus offering it up. And then a number of students took him up on his offer, and he had a really positive, beautiful experience with some students there. So, it seems like it was just prompted by one student. That's all conjecture for now, but that's what the students on the ground think happened.
Well, I can imagine. I can remember my first semester on campus at LSU, Louisiana State University, and a little bit overwhelming as a freshman, even though I had was a kind of a seasoned freshman. I had been in the Marine Corps, but still the whole process can be overwhelming, and to have someone offer to pray with you can be, can be encouraging for some of those who, for the first time, are facing this new environment of the college campus.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, especially for some freshmen, who that was really their first week on a campus, I think that would be a really powerful gesture. And, especially in a state full of great people like South Carolina, the man said he was really having powerful experiences with students on campus. So it was certainly adding, good to the campus, if anything. It was a positive thing for the school.
So, Emily, what have you heard from officials there on campus? Have they responded to the stories that you've placed?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting about their response, because several media outlets reached out to them for reaction, and Clemson's response is actually sort of a textbook example of how universities across the country are using red tape to strangle free speech on campus. So they essentially said, because this man who is offering prayer was not a student, his offer constituted solicitation, and he has to go through this procedure where he has to file paperwork in order to be on a public space maintained by taxpayers to silently offer students the opportunity to pray with him. So the university is standing by its decision and saying essentially that since he's a non-student and he was not in the designated free speech area, he would need to file all of this paperwork in order to set up a chair with a prayer sign on it. It's just a great example of universities using red tape to shut down speech on their campuses.
Absolutely. And this isn't isolated. It's happening across the country. We're up against a break, Emily. I want to thank you for joining us. But very quickly, what's next? Are you going to pursue this?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do everything we can until Clemson changes their policy. That's what we're doing on campuses across the country. If anybody's interested in learning more, they can just head over to www.yaf.org for more information on Young America Foundation and Young Americans for Freedom.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and for the great work that you guys are doing on college campuses to protect these fundamental freedoms. So thanks, Emily, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Emily Yashinsky with Young America's Foundation. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, an update from Louisiana. I'm still here in Louisiana this week, helping the relief efforts. Todd Taylor, who is with Samaritan's Purse, is with me when we come back from the break. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Lots of economic news coming out this week. We've got personal income, personal spending out already. We look at personal income is up 0.4%. That's 0.2% higher than it was in June. And that is being perceived by the markets as very good news. Personal spending, unfortunately, lagged behind the June number, but it was up 0.3%. That makes the savings rate up to 5.7%. Very good number. Good to see. Not great for the economy, but very good for families and individuals. Also, consumer confidence number of the government coming out is expected to be down. Chicago PMI, that's coming out on Wednesday. Manufacturing number, that also expected to be down. Pending home sales numbers coming out, and that's expected to be up for the month of July. Also, construction spending, a number that we like to watch closely, that is expected to be a swing of 1%, being up 0.6% from a negative 0.6%. One of my favorite numbers, and one we've got to watch closely, is productivity number. Everything revolves around productivity. It is expected to be down over a half of 1%, 0.6% for the second quarter. Of course, the big number, non-farm private payrolls. That is expected to be 175 from a July number of 217. Factory orders, also a big number, will be out Friday.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right. Well, I tell you, the rebuilding effort in Louisiana, the cleaning up, I mean, it's still, they're just now starting to get down the roads to clean up all the debris, and just in some parts, it's still amazing the just how vast the devastation was here. But people are, they're coming back. You know, a lot of hard work, a lot of long hours, a lot of relief efforts going on. We had a great day in church yesterday, a packed house. And folks are, you know, I just have to say they're encouraged. And they're, one of the things that is encouraging people is the response that we had from folks across the country who have responded to the need. In fact, as I was heading here to the studio, I left the church and two trucks were pulling in with relief supplies coming from all across. And that's constant. We're taking a dozen or so a day of people coming from across the country just to give. This is all based, it's all church-based, all faith-based. And, of course, one of the key partners in this is Samaritan's Purse. First people I called, Franklin Graham and his team, and within 48 hours they were set up on the parking lot of our church. Literally have hundreds of applications of people asking for help, and they've gotten to many of them, but it's going to be a long, long process. And the man overseeing that effort here on the ground in Louisiana, he is assistant manager of the U.S. Disaster Relief for Samaritan's Purse. He's become a good friend of mine, Todd Taylor. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to be on the radio and good to be in Louisiana, too. A little hot and steamy here as compared to North Carolina, but you're learning to like the food down here, aren't you?
Oh, I am. Jay and his team's taking real good care of us, along with our cooks that are here as well. We're faring pretty well down here. So are our volunteers. Thanks to you guys.
Well, that's why you got to work hard and sweat a lot, so you don't expand the waistband too much while you're here.
Because
we're going to make sure we feed you good. Well, give our listeners kind of an update on where things stand and how you see things going forward here in Louisiana.
So here at the site at Greenwell Springs Baptist Church, we have taken in, Tony, over 1,300 applications for assistance. We also have, this week, we have just stood up an additional site down in Gonzales, partnering with the Church International. And then we still have our response going over in Lafayette at Crossroads Church. And they've been overwhelmed with requests as well. And so we have lots of volunteer needs across the Louisiana area. You know, whichever site you'd like to go to as a volunteer, we could certainly accommodate you. All of our sites are anticipating a large turnout this Labor Day weekend. And we're just praising God for good volunteers and the ability to get into a lot of homes just to help them with the clean out. But more than that, Tony, just the opportunity that Christ has given us to be able to encourage these people, let them know that they've got a Father in heaven that loves them, and that that we're here to be his hands and feet.
And that's exactly what it does. I've talked to so many people who just, you know, we're at that point of just not knowing what to do and discouraged and on the verge of despair. And there's a knock at the door, and Samaritan's Purse shows up and helps him through the entire process of pulling out their stuff, salvaging what can be done, what can be salvaged, boxing it up, and then beginning the process of cleaning up. And you mentioned volunteers. Folks can, you can go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over, SamaritansPurse.org, and volunteer. And now, Todd, when someone volunteers, you provide housing. For instance, we're housing on our site at our church, the volunteers. You feed them, you take care of them, you give them direction and varying levels of skill. I mean, you don't have to be a carpenter in order to be a part of this process.
That's right, Tony. Our volunteers come from all walks of life. And we've got ladies here that have done office work their entire lives, and they're out there pulling carpet and tearing apart sheetrock and things like that. We've got trained team leaders at all of our sites that are there to guide the volunteers through the day, regardless of their level of experience with construction type background. So we can accommodate anybody with a willing back and an able mind, vice versa, able back and willing mind.
And I even qualify for that. I've been able to do some of that, so I meet the criteria. So if I can do it, you know, practically anybody can do it. But it's a great opportunity to minister. And you know, one of the things, Todd, that I have found very fascinating, and I hosted, you know, in our backyard, not much at the house left, but we had the Liberty students. We had students from Liberty came down, Liberty University, my alma mater. They came down and were a part of this process. We got another group of Liberty students coming. But the fellowship that's developed among the volunteers, so many of them told me, you know what, I really don't want to leave. I want to come back.
Tony, we do. We become family at these disasters. From the small responses to the big ones like this, you know, we've got volunteers that they look forward to this in a way because they're able to have a family reunion with people that they've not seen in years. And some of them, you know, as soon as they walk in the door, they pick up the conversation where they left off the last time out. And it's just so neat to see these folks and the sense of camaraderie and just brothers and sisters in Christ working together to bring hope to these folks that are so devastated right now. It's incredible that the Lord has allowed me to be a part of it.
Well, they're making a huge difference, and Todd, I want to thank you for all that you're doing in Samaritan's Purse. Great partners. We're glad to partner with you and appreciative of all that you do.
You guys are a great host, a great partner for us as well.
All right. All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we're going to take your phone calls here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Every election is important, but this year's is critical. The very survival of our republic is at stake. This is Tony Perkins, and I want to urge you to be a part of securing America's future by selecting godly leaders. As Americans, we have the right to vote. As Christians, we have an obligation to vote, preferring leaders who will stand on biblical principles. If we want our nation to once again be a beacon of hope to the world, Christians must take time to vote. Christians vote, so plan now to vote your biblical value.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Marquis Laughlin is founder of Acts of the Word Ministry and host of the radio and online show, The Moral Dilemma. He challenges believers to develop a biblical worldview through dramatized illustrations and interpretive readings of the Bible.
They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Marquis Laughlin is sure to be an entertaining speaker this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plans soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. More information about the Values Voter Summit there. Also information if you want to keep up with the relief effort here in Louisiana. And again, I am broadcasting this week from Louisiana, where we're involved. Our church is spearheading a major relief effort at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. If you want to keep up with our daily post on the relief effort, you can go to GreenwellSprings.com or just go to TonyPerkins.com and follow links over. But we're feeding hundreds of meals each day, hot meals. It's just really hard to wrap your mind around it when people have lost their appliances. They don't have their homes. Some of them are living in travel trailers, motor homes if they had them. Whatever they can find in front of their homes, because they've got to do the rebuilding, but they don't have the means of necessarily fixing meals, and so we certainly can relate to that. So we're providing those at the church, as well as other relief items, and then, of course, Samaritan's Purse helping with the clean out of many of these homes. I mean, some homes, I mean, literally water up to the roof, and the mud and everything inside, and so it's in some cases hard work. But they got teams, and as Todd said, there are team leaders that know what they're doing. And so if you'd like to be a part of that, go to SamaritansPurse.org, and you'll never regret it. And they're one of the best organizations I have ever partnered with and been around when it comes to this. And everyone who is associated with them says that. All right, I got a question for you as we open up the phone lines at 866-372-7234. I want to go back to what's happening there at Clemson University. What do you think our founders would have thought about the free speech areas on college campuses? Do you really think the founders had this idea that our institutions of higher learning should cordon off an area in which people would be free to express themselves? I mean, do you really think that? Or would they be appalled at what progressives, i.e. liberals, have done to this country. What do you think? 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation this afternoon. And first, already on the line from Arkansas is David. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks. Pleasant call, Tony.
Hey, how you doing?
Since you came up with the question, I had some stuff to talk about on Mark.
Well, you beat me to the question, so you go right ahead, David.
Well, it's hard for me to understand that Marsha Blackburn and the group that she's with there, how is it that they're coming down on the state of New Mexico's university there, and we've still got Planned Parenthood doing business as usual? And why have they waited so long for that Attorney General in New Mexico to get a response? And they still haven't got one, what, 60, 90 days later?
Right.
And, you know, it's
very good
question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Founding Fathers probably turning over in their grave. And I have a question about that. Are they making the Muslims, if there are any on that campus, go to those free speech areas and everything to do their thing?
No, probably afraid to do that. Yeah. Hey, David, let me take that first, your first comment or question. Let me answer that, because I think it's a very good one. I think it's probably on the minds of a lot of people. Why? Why aren't they doing something about Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider? Why are they waiting so long for the Attorney General to do something? Well, Congress, remember, three branches of government, and Congress is the policy branch, doesn't have enforcement authority. And so the reason, number one, they're leading on the Attorney General there in New Mexico regarding state law versus the federal law, which they've apparently violated as well, is because they know good and well that the Justice Department under Barack Obama is not going to do a darn thing. I mean, not going to do anything. I mean, we've seen that over and over and over again. You're talking about the most lawless administration in the history of our country, especially when it comes to abortion. I mean, this is the Planned Parenthood president. So that's not going to happen. So they were hoping that they could prod the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico to enforce state law, but apparently he is indifferent toward what's happening. It clearly looks like the university there has a relationship with the abortion industry that they don't want to disturb. How high does that go up in New Mexico politics? I don't know. But that would be... That would be the reason. They're limited on what they can do. They don't have enforcement power. They can't make something happen. They can draw attention to it. They can issue subpoenas, which they have done, and they can shine a spotlight on it, but they can't. They don't have the authority to enforce the law. That is the role of the executive branch, which, again, as we know, didn't quite happen. All right, 866-372-7234. I want to go back, to our topic of what's happening on college campuses where we see these free speech zones. And by the way, the Alliance Defending Freedom doing a great job on this issue as well. But what do you think our founders would have thought about these free speech areas on college campuses? Something they envisioned happening? Or is it totally contrary to the freedoms that our founders guaranteed us? I mean, it's pretty clear to me in the First Amendment. Anyway, I want to know what you think. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation this afternoon. And again, I want to thank all of those across the country who have responded in some form or fashion to the need here in Louisiana. I mean, literally, I've heard from people all across the country and have had people come in, even some listeners here of Washington Watch that have driven to Louisiana to bring supplies and even volunteer and be a part of the effort here. And I just want to say thank you and continue to pray. This is not going to be a short process. It's going to be a long process. Again, it's just really hard to grasp unless you see it with your own eyes. It's so vast in its reach in terms of the destruction and the devastation. I think it's doing something. As I talk with people and as we walk through this as well, it is it's helping people focus on the things that matter. You know, when you look at all of, you know, really, it's people's, almost the totality of their earthly possessions are sitting in ditches in front of their homes because they flooded out. You know, it really brings to mind, as I shared yesterday with the congregation, the scripture about storing things up on earth where rust and moth destroy. Certainly add to that flood, but it does cause you to focus on the things that have lasting value and significance. And we're seeing that when we have, one of the things that's encouraged me the most, and a lot of things have encouraged me in this process, but one of the things I've been encouraged about the most is the volunteers who are helping very long hours. Our church is running about almost 16 hours a day, 12 hours a day, really serving the public, but long hours for the volunteers and the staff. And what's been very encouraging are the youth, the young people who are volunteering. I mentioned earlier the Liberty University students that came down here to Louisiana to volunteer and be a part of the clean-out effort, and we had them over for a cookout, and just encouraged by them and the youth and the local communities who are just working to help other people. And there's a... This is not, it's like everybody is touched by this, so everybody feels it, and it's not a matter of sympathy, it's rather it's empathy. And I'm just so encouraged by the youth, the young people that in this community who understand this is a time to roll up your sleeves, go to work, and help your neighbor. And that's what we've seen across the board. And it's sad that it's a disaster that takes, you know, it takes to get everybody together, but I mean, as a community, people pull together, and they work together. Of course, a few anomalies there, a few exceptions to that. Part has been the local press, and I probably not have time to go in that today. I may talk about that tomorrow. Some of the local reporters who, you know, while everybody else is pulling together, putting aside their ideology to work for the benefit of the community, some of these reporters not doing so, continue to drive their political agendas, and it's really sad. You know, like one of the stations in Baton Rouge, WBRZ, is really bad about that. The Advocate, major paper, too concerned about pushing their political agenda, really, to talk about the good stories about how community is taking shape and coming together, and how the really the churches across the country are driving this relief effort and working together. So you see the best, and sometimes you see the worst in crises like this with people. But overall, I have to say that it's been very encouraging, and so I would encourage you to continue to pray for the folks here in Louisiana. And if you, again, if you have the opportunity, have time, that you could come down to be a part of it. Samaritan's Purse, great organization to team up with. They take care of everything while you're here. And again, we're housing those volunteers on our campus at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. And you can find out more by going to the website, tonyperkins.com. And, or again, samaritanspurse.org. Either way, you can get there and get the information and sign up to be a volunteer. All right, I'm going to go back to our topic. I got off topic there, but going back to the issue of these free speech zones on college campuses. Let me just throw this out there. I know we just got a couple minutes left, but I'd really like to hear from maybe a student that's on one of these college campuses. Now, I know this is throwing it out there, but maybe you've encountered these, maybe you've seen these, maybe you're disturbed by these. I don't know. I just got a couple minutes left, but I really would like to hear from some of our college students who have ventured back onto the campus. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'm going to make way for a student. All right, if you're a student, I got a couple minutes left. I want to hear from you. If you've encountered this or your thoughts regarding these free speech areas on college campuses that have popped up everywhere. I mean, this is a big problem, and it's not new. I mean, it's just getting more rampant as, you know, progressives work to silence any kind of, well, I mean, it's really, they talk about diversity, but they're really not for diversity. They're for one view and one view only. And it's certainly not the conservative view. They're looking for the liberal line, and if you deviate at all from the liberal viewpoint, you are you're excluded. And it really is unfortunate because college campuses used to be a place where ideas were debated, facts were sought, and you know, people want to discover truth. Not so much so anymore. And the real, I guess the, I don't want to say victims, I don't like that word, but the those who come out on the short end of the stick, you know who it is? It's the students. Because they are force-fed this liberal ideology, and there's no way to challenge it. It's unfortunate. It really is. But it can be changed, and we're seeing it changed on campus after campus for those who will stand up and challenge the status quo. All right, we're going to take a final call here, but I want to get to this. I know it's a topic I care about. It's one you should care about, too. But let's go to Tennessee and talk to Kevin. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello?
Hey, Kevin, go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so just to go on the record, I definitely don't like what's going on in the campuses, because I do believe that it is going in the area of that sort of authoritarian left, and that's really what I wanted to call about, is that I am a progressive liberal, but the thing is that there's a spectrum to this, and I think that it's unhonest to generalize the whole liberal party, because there is definitely a moderate thing that does see conservative values and does see liberal values, and they do place their vote in that.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I'm sorry, we're out of time, up against a break, but I'd love for you to call back, because I'd like to have that conversation with you, because I agree with you. And I'm sorry if I was overbroad in that statement, because I am fine with those who I disagree with who are open to a fair and honest discussion of the issues. So, Kevin, you call back again later this week. We're going to have that conversation with you, because I appreciate you calling in. So will you do that? Will you call me back? All right, folks, for you, we'll be back again tomorrow, Lord willing, and I hope you will as well. But I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul: when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.